You know, Bishop Sheen said that if they applaud for you before you speak, that's faith. If they applaud halfway through, that's hope. And if they applaud at the end, that's charity. So thank you very much. I obviously give different talks to different groups. Preaching in church, or religious education programs, dinner talks like this. And as Eric alluded to, since the Archbishop is off the circuit for a while, I've taken his place several times at talks that he was scheduled to give. I went to a parish in southern Indiana, and 5 minutes before the talk, I looked into the room, and there were only four people there. And I said to the pastor, I said, didn't you announce at the masses and put in the bulletin that I would be replacing the Archbishop in speaking? And he said, well, I did forget. He said, I'm sorry. But he said, it does look like word got around anyway. So and especially for an after-dinner talk, people expect you to be interesting, to be entertaining, to tell jokes, to be enlightening, educational, inspiring, and challenging. I take my cues from the wit of Will Rogers. Will Rogers said one time that after eating an entire bull, a mountain lion felt so good that he just kept roaring and roaring. And he kept it up until a hunter heard him and came along and shot and killed him. The moral is, when you're full of bull, keep your mouth shut. So we will attempt to do that tonight. I am aware that you're going to lose an hour because it's daylight savings time. And I am also aware that concerning most topics, I know about as much as Chris Wright and Angela Buckman know about the weather. So we shall see. I met a guy, Father and I were coming down this escalator tonight, and I met a guy, and he said, I think I know you, Father. He said, didn't you preach at Holy Rosary last Good Friday? And I said, well, yes, I did. He said, oh, I remember that. He said, it was the most inspiring 3 hours that I've ever spent. And I said, sir, I have never spoken 3 hours in my life. He said, well, it sure seemed like that to me. We were taught in the seminary at St. Meinrad that a talk should have a catchy, attention-getting opening, that the closing should challenge your listeners, and that the two of them should be as close together as possible. So tonight's topic, the pro-life movement. I'm well aware that in many instances in talking about some things, I could depress you, some of the things that we hear about, particularly in our country. And yet at the same time, I do want to make you smile. I want to make you laugh. You know, St. Thomas Aquinas taught that being able to smile or to laugh is one sign of being human. Because animals don't laugh or smile, but humans do. So being able to laugh and smile is a sign of being human. Animal, you see Garfield in the comics and Marmaduke and all that, but not so. So, to talk about pro-life issues at this Catholic Life Network dinner, I thought I'd go back to the little quip I told you from Bishop Sheen about faith, hope, and charity. And I think that's what I'm going to talk about tonight, but I'm going to reverse them. I'm going to do charity, hope, and then faith. Charity. You know, we know the new Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI's first encyclical is about charity or love. Deus Caritas Est. God is love. And the Holy Father points out that there are various kinds of love. And he also points out in that very same encyclical that our society has many problems that need to be remedied. And he says, if you call a spade, and you attack those problems head on, that that's charity, that that's love, that that can be done out of love. And so what I'm saying is, we have to look at some of the challenges in our society to suggest remedies. We have to know what we are up against, but we have to do it in charity for the sake of others, fraternal correction. And so in that spirit of charity, some of the things that are going on I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not really going to tell you that these people are idiots. You can come to that conclusion on your own. And if you don't, you're an idiot. For example, think what goes on in our culture. Last December, the NFL player Michael Vick was sentenced to prison for 23 months for dogfighting. Now, dogfighting is cruel. It is illegal. People were outraged. He was treated as public enemy number one. There is an editorial that was in a newspaper in Maine. It's the Maine Sun Journal. And the editorial said this: the moral and journalistic obligation to condemn Vic with language typically reserved for child molesters and drug dealers. He got terrible press. He was public enemy number one for dogfighting. But you know what? If Michael Vick had participated in the killing of dozens of innocent babies, human beings, and abortions, he'd still be the quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, and he would be celebrated. One of four babies dies by choice. It's legal to obtain an abortion all 9 months of pregnancy for elective reasons in all 50 states in this country. Planned Parenthood, which, as we know, is the largest provider of abortions in the U.S., here in Indianapolis has just finished up a $7 million campaign. $5 million will go to upgrade their existing Planned Parenthood centers, and they're going to build a new one up on the northwest side, up at 86th and Georgetown Road. And if you look, some very fine civic leaders in our community have given to Planned Parenthood. They've made significant gifts to that campaign. Planned Parenthood is not interested in either planning or in parenthood, either one. Human life has become cheap. It's disposable. Get rid of it. It was a bank robber went into a bank and robbed it. And he turned to a guy and he said, "Did you see me rob this bank?" And the guy said, "Yes, I did." And he shot and killed him. And then he turned to a couple and he asked the man and the woman, he said, "Did you see me rob this bank?" And the woman said, "No, I didn't. But I think my husband did." We know that our children, our family life, in our culture is certainly not where it should be. You know, look at the role models that we put before them. How many high-paid athletes are actually violent drug users, and they live immoral lifestyles? They ought to be in jail rather than living in mansions up in Carmel. Look at our young people. Take a lesson. You know, if you're a college basketball coach who repeatedly breaks the rules, you can walk away with $750,000, go your way, and then you can probably get a job coaching in the NBA. This is nuts. But these are the role models that we tolerate, okay? It's crazy. We know that in our culture, the role of parents, the family, is undermined in very subtle ways. Recently, the Alaska Supreme Court ruled that underage girls can seek abortions without their parents' consent. But you know what? If one of those same girls is injured at school on the playground, the school nurse or even the hospital cannot treat her without the parents' consent. Now you figure that out. School officials in Portland, Maine have decided to allow children as young as 11 years old to obtain contraceptives without their parents' knowledge. As young as 11 years old. Our children are seen as consumers. Companies spend well over $2-3 billion a year in advertising, targeting our children to spend money, and they do. You know what the hottest ticket is these days? It's not the Pope coming to New York and Washington in April, I assure you that. It's Hannah Montana, the daughter of Billy Ray Cyrus. Have you ever seen her website? She's no Shirley Temple. She clearly appears as an adult in sexual poses. She is not portraying herself as a child. Even a child psychologist in California, you know how nuts psychologists are, But I do want to put in a plug for Ray Gurundy, who's coming to speak for Catholic Radio on March 27th. He is very good. I gave some guy in confession the other day a penance to go to that talk because he and his wife are having such problem with their youngsters. That's his penance, to go to that talk. I didn't realize it was going to cost him $45 to go, but that I suspect he can afford it. But anyway, this is what a child psychologist in California wrote recently. He said this, she said this: in my practice, I see kids becoming incredibly consumerist. The starkest example is when I ask them what they want to do when they grow up. They all say they want to make money. And when they talk about their friends, they talk about the clothes they wear, the designer labels they wear, not the person's human qualities. That's how we're teaching our young people to define people. Maybe you read about, in Europe, a recent incident at La Sapienza. La Sapienza is Italian for wisdom. La Sapienza is a university in Rome. It's the largest European university. It's the most ancient of Rome's three public universities. It was founded at the beginning of the 14th century by Pope Boniface VIII. Shortly after that, Eugene III, when he was pope, 30 years later after it was founded, introduced a new tax on wine in order to raise funds for the university. You can bet the place is well funded. But anyhow, today, this La Sapienza University has 138,000 students. And the Holy Father, Pope Benedict, was supposed to speak there in January, but they canceled it. The Vatican canceled it because there were huge protests on campus among the faculty and the students. And the guise was, well, it's not appropriate for a religious figure to come to a secular university. They talked about church censorship. They brought up about the case of Galileo, which was centuries ago. And they had these signs that they were carrying that says, the Pope's views offend and humiliate us. But you watch on CNN, and if you can read Italian, you know what those signs said? The Pope is homophobic. The Pope is against gay marriage. They had the gay rights flag, the gay agenda. That was the real issue. That was the real issue at La Sapienza. Well, that's enough of the bad news. But in all charity, it has to be shared. We have to know what we're up against, because charity always seeks solutions to problems. And we have plenty in the U.S. And really, in all honesty, in all charity, we have to say with our Lord on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. I really don't think they could possibly know what they're doing. And so we have to pray for these people. Our blessed Lord also said, the poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want. The same applies to the stupid as well. Enough on charity. Let's go to hope. Yes, certainly things in our culture are a mess. But there are signs of hope. There really are signs of hope. But you got to watch what you hope for, watch what you ask for. You know, there was a couple, they were 50 years old, and they had been married 25 years, and they went for their wedding anniversary to Hawaii. And as they were walking along the beach, they found the bottle, they picked the bottle up, the genie comes out, I will grant you whatever your hope is, whatever your wish. The man looked at his wife and said, I'm sorry, honey, but I hope for a wife that's 30 years younger than I. Poof, he turned into an 80-year-old man. So you better watch what you hope for. Signs of hope. The number of abortions and abortion providers in the United States and in the state of Indiana has been decreasing for about the last 20 years. And I got this from the website for Planned Parenthood of Indiana. The Guttmacher Institute, they report statistics for Planned Parenthood. In their report, really from just last January, says that the abortion rate for women ages 15 to 44 is the lowest it's been since the idiots on the Supreme Court made abortion on demand legal in all 50 states. And then they report with a tear in their eye that 86 counties out of 92 in Indiana have no abortion providers. So abortions, the number of abortion providers, is going down. That's a sign of hope, for sure. Another sign of hope, I think that our young people are getting it. We have some young people here tonight, but I think by and large, our young people are getting it. Thursday, I was at a luncheon at the Catholic Center for a group called A Promise to Keep. A Promise to Keep is an abstinence group that really started out in the auspices of the Archdiocese, but it's gone independent. It's heavily funded by two of our Catholic hospitals, but it's gone not just into Catholic schools, but into public schools as well. And also, really, at the same luncheon, speaking there was Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman. She spoke about the value of waiting. At that lunch, I took the Archbishop's place there. There were 400 teenagers from seven different high schools around Indiana. These kids were athletes, they were cheerleaders, National Honor Society student leaders. Most of them were seniors. They're going to go to Purdue, IU, Notre Dame, Ivy Tech, really, really great schools. Five, they had a student from each school speak. Five of the seven speakers from the schools, five of them were boys. And these are some of the things that they wrote. And I wrote them down on my program because I knew I was going to give this talk tonight. These are phrases that these high school kids used. The treasure of our sexuality. My commitment to chastity. Saving myself is the greatest gift I can give to my future husband. To live as Christ did. God's message of chastity. What a joy to hear phrases like that come out of high school kids' mouths. And it's not very often that you think you might hear that. So the young people are getting it. I think they're getting the message. Look at the Right to Life March in Washington, D.C. This is the 35th year for that march. Tens of thousands of young people from all over the country, they march in Washington, D.C., to protest the Roe versus Wade decision by the Supreme Court. And our own illustrious director of pro-life ministry, Sister Diane, was quoted in the press. And here's what Sister said. She said, our youth are pro-life, and so the eventual overturn of Roe versus Wade is a given. It's a given. That's what Sister was able to say, and I think we all agree with it. I want to say something about that movie that was released over Christmas, The Golden Compass, based on the book of the same name by the author Philip Pullman. That's water. Anyway, this author, Philip Pullman, maybe you read, he said, my books are about killing God. I am trying to undermine the basis of Christian belief. What the author said. You know what? That movie was a big, fat box office failure. It was a big failure. In the United States, they grossed $25.4 million. And they paid Nicole Kidman $18.8 million just to be in the movie. That's the dumbest thing she ever did besides marry Tom Cruise. But it was a big flop. They lost money on it. Money is not to be made by attacking Jesus Christ. And they figured that out. It was a big, big flop. Other parts of the world are waking up and smelling the coffee, if you will. I want to give you an example from Australia. Until last December, the Prime Minister of Australia was John Howard. And toward the end of John Howard's term as Prime Minister of Australia, there were a group of very militant Muslims in Australia, and they were angered over various government policies. And I'm going to quote precisely here what the Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, said. He said this. He said, "You know what? Immigrants, not Australians, must adapt. Take it or leave it. I am tired of this nation worrying about whether we are offending some individual or their culture. Most Australians believe in God. This is not some Christian right-wing political push, but a fact, because Christian men and women on Christian principles founded this nation. It is certainly appropriate to display it on the walls of our schools. If God offends you, then I suggest you consider another part of the world as your new home, because God is part of our culture." That's what he told them. Then he went on to say, "This is our country, our land, our lifestyle, and we will allow you every opportunity to enjoy all this. You are welcome here. But once you're done complaining, whining, and griping about our flag, our pledge, and our Christian beliefs, or our way of life, I highly encourage you to take advantage of one other great Australian freedom, the right to leave. If you aren't happy here, then leave. We didn't force you to come here. You asked to be here, so accept the country you accepted." That's what the Prime Minister of Australia had to say. So there is hope out there. Charity, hope, and now let's talk about faith. We, the church, have been right all along. For example, you may have read that there has been a major breakthrough in stem cell research. And the church has consistently said that stem cell research is morally acceptable if embryos, human lives, are not destroyed. Well, now, researchers have been able to reprogram adult skin cells into becoming pluripotent stem cells. Is that right, Dr. Geisler? That's absolutely right. Thank you. Well, this basically means that the practice of embryonic stem cell research, where human life is destroyed, the practice of embryonic stem cell research is obsolete. The reprogrammed cells do not become new embryos. Until now, the only way to obtain such cells was through creating human embryos and harvesting their stem cells and then killing them in the process. They discovered this at the University of Wisconsin research facility. And the research team director told CNN this. He said on CNN, he said, "People didn't know it would be this easy." Well, you know what? The Catholic Church did all along. So these people who have trotted out poor Christopher Reeve and Michael J. Fox, trotted them out to make their case for embryonic stem cell research, and that was more about money than research, they've had their rug pulled out from under them. They have been proven wrong, and the church was right from the very beginning. Humanae Vitae, in 1968, reaffirmed the church's teaching that artificial contraception was wrong. And you know what? As it turns out, the church was right. At the time, the Pope was Pope Paul VI. And Pope Paul VI made four general prophecies or predictions about what would happen if the church's teaching on contraception were ignored. He said, if you ignore the Catholic teaching on contraception, here's what's going to happen. Number one, prediction. He said, conjugal infidelity and the general lowering of morality. The increase in divorces, the increase in out-of-wedlock pregnancies, the increase in sexually transmitted diseases, this stupid idea that teens can engage in sexual activity responsibly. That's the mantra of Planned Parenthood. You know what? Teens are just as responsible in the area of their sexual activity, just as responsible as they are in making their beds, cleaning their rooms, and getting their homework done on time. And handing out birth control is not the answer. Planned Parenthood is not interested in births, and they're not interested in control either. Second prediction from Paul VI. He said, men will lose respect for women. Men will lose respect for women. Man will come to the point of considering woman as a mere instrument of selfish enjoyment, not see women as respected and beloved companions. People will treat each other as objects of pleasure. The biggest single use of the internet is pornography. That's the biggest single use. Number three, the Holy Father predicted contraception would become a dangerous weapon in the hands of public authorities. Forced abortion in China, their one-child policy. I read somewhere recently that they're rethinking that. They think it's a mistake. No kidding. Third world countries that sterilize people that don't even know what they're undergoing. Population control programs in third world countries. And then Paul VI's fourth prediction, people would think that they have unlimited dominion over their bodies. Production of test tube babies, euthanasia, destroying human embryos, organ transplants from almost dead people. 40 years ago, this year, 40 years ago, Paul VI was right on. The church's moral teaching is right, and time will tell. You know, frankly, the Catholic Church is a major player in the world. The media is so desperately interested in what the Catholic Church is doing or saying, even when their reporting is negative or unfair. We know that there has been a disproportionate attention to the recent sex abuse scandals, even though it's much worse elsewhere. There's no attention paid to recent similar stories about the Baptist Church or the Jehovah's Witnesses. There was a recent Associated Press study of sexual abuse in public schools, and it shows a far, far greater problem in public schools. 2 weeks after it was printed or came out, 2 weeks after it was released, only 5 papers in this country printed it. And so the Catholic Church, this is a backhanded compliment, the Catholic Church has been and remains a big deal. Look at the current presidential political campaign, which I'm sure you've all heard of. Politicians know they have to have the Christian vote. Evangelical Christians who share our pro-life stance are a major, major factor in the presidential campaign. And really, some of these so-called Catholic politicians who are not pro-life, they're out there making fools out of themselves. Over 100 years ago, the British Prime Minister, William Ewart Gladstone, said this. He said, you know, if you want to succeed in politics, you must keep your conscience well under control. Almost 2 years ago, in May 2006, 38 senators voted against a bill that would reaffirm English as the official language of the United States. 38 voted against it. Now, why in the heck are we even voting on it? But 38 voted against it, including the 2 current Democratic candidates for president and our own Senator Evan Bayh. They all voted against it. Hey, let's bring the former Prime Minister of Australia over here to teach these people a few things. You know. Years ago, the chaplain for the United States Senate was a Protestant minister, Dr. Edward Hale. And someone asked him, Dr. Hale, do you pray for the senators? He replied, no, I look at the senators and then I pray for the country. Well, but in all charity, we realize that the world is a mess when it comes to respect for life issues. And there are a lot of people out there that need fraternal correction. There are a lot of people that need our prayers. Because in terms of the natural law, and that's God's law, they are wrong. I wish you could have known, and maybe some of you did, our Father Tony Spaguzza, Father Spaguzza was from my parish as a youngster, Holy Rosaries in Italian. And he was a longtime pastor in Brazil, Indiana, which is suburban Terre Haute, I think. But several years ago, there was a big case over there about mercy killings. There was a male nurse in a nursing home that was euthanizing the patients, killing the patients. And Father Tony was a very quiet man. He had a really dry wit. And he'd be the last person that you would expect to go on camera and talk about. But somehow, unawares, this reporter from Terre Haute caught him off guard. And he had to speak to the press. And they were quizzing him about this case in Terre Haute. And they said to him, well, Father, isn't the Catholic Church certainly pro-life? Isn't the Catholic Church against abortion? Isn't the Catholic Church against euthanasia? And Father Tony, in his very dry wit, said, no, I don't think so. And they said, well, Father, everybody knows that the Catholic Church is against euthanasia. It's against abortion. And Father Tony said, no, I don't think so. He said, it's God that's against abortion. It's God that's against euthanasia. That's who it is. It's God. But there is plenty of reason, as I outlined, for hope. And I hope you all know that all of us in the pro-life movement, we're making a difference. Good things are happening. And groups like this one are critical. We can see results. And I'd like to take an opportunity here to congratulate the organizers of tonight's dinner and congratulate the director of our pro-life ministry for the Archdiocese, Sister Diane, who has made such a difference since she has come to be our director. So to Eileen, to all the organizers, Sister Catholics United for the Faith, thank you. So in charity, we have seen problems. We will pray. In hope, we have seen good things happening, like here locally with this gathering here tonight. And in faith, I think in faith, we should have known this all along. The end of St. Matthew's Gospel. The end of St. Matthew's Gospel when Jesus is about to ascend back to his Father. St. Matthew says this, when the apostles gathered with him on the mountain, when they saw him, they worshipped, but they doubted. They worshipped, but they doubted. Now, how can that be? They had been with him all along. They had seen the miracles, but they were weak. They entertained doubts. But still, in sheer faith, blind faith, they knelt down and worshipped the Lord. I'm well aware that the days are long and hard in the pro-life movement. We are tempted sometimes to doubt our effectiveness. Never forget those final words of St. Matthew's Gospel. Jesus says, teach them to observe all I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always until the end of the world. This is what the Catholic Life Network is about. Teaching them all that he has commanded us. And yes, we move forward in faith. He is with us until the end of the world. Of one thing I am convinced, of one thing I am certain, providence never fails. Let's move forward now in the pro-life movement in the providence that will not fail us. God be with you. Thank you.